The Guardian.
Hello, I'm Alexis Petridis. This is Music Weekly. Summer's over, although did it ever actually arrive? Good question. And as the festival season rolls to an end, we hose down our wellies and look back at this year's highlights. Plus, we're reviewing tracks from Nicky and the Dove, Justice again, second time, encore une fois, for Justice, and an 18-minute epic from Ariel Pink's Haunted Graffiti. That's all on this week's Music Weekly from The Guardian. Hello and welcome to the programme. The nights are drawing in, autumn is very slowly upon us, and as we previously mentioned, the festivals are over. Later in this programme, we'll be looking back at the summer's festival highlights with today's guests. Chris Salmon, hello. Your first time on the...
Years ago, 2006, I think I was on.
Well, did it go really badly? Why did it take you so long?
I don't know, actually. Yeah, that's a good point. Never asked back.
And Rob DeBank. Hello. Rob. Are you hot foot from Bestival?
I have indeed, yeah. Just washed down... Actually, I haven't washed down my wellies because it wasn't too muddy. But yeah, just extricated myself from the site, packed up the last tents, and here I am.
Have you been staying in it? Do you have sort of nice accommodation for that period? Or you're not in a tent? From
No, I'm in a sort of large Winnebago with all my kids, wife, a nanny or two, and yeah.
Well, look, we will get onto festivals in a moment, but let's start with some new music. Singles Club, three tracks, one that each of us loves, and we will start with Rob's choice. That's The Drummer by Nicky and the Dove, the Fake Blood remix. Rob, that's your choice. Tell us about it. Tell us about Nicky and the Dove. Tell us about Fake Blood. Tell us why you brought it in.
I love Nicky and the Dove. Scandinavian band, I think, from Norway. And, you know, I love Robin. I love The Knife. I love that whole kind of flavour. So that sort of female-led, electronic, poppy kind of angle. You know, it's very de nos jours. And I just absolutely love it. I had Robin play at Bestival, and Nicky and the Dove, in fact. And, you know, they're just kind of cult, but have that potential to just cross over massively and have just seemed to get these big audiences. And
they pull a lot of people when they play at Bestival, people like that.
Yeah, I mean, Robin was second headline to Bjork. So,
wow.
You know, she's, and around the world, you know, she is headliner in her own right at lots of festivals. She actually thought she was low down on the bill, being second. And Fake Blood mix, you know, Fake Blood has kind of just added his own sort of electro.
Who is for the benefit of listeners, who don't know who Fake Blood is? Tell us about Fake Blood.
Well, I think it's revealed now. For a couple of years, he was keeping it quiet that he's Theo Keating, who used to be in the Wise Guys.
Oh, really?
See, maybe I shouldn't have said this, but yeah, I'm pretty sure people know who he is now. Okay. He DJs without a mask on now. So
wow.
And yeah, I mean, Fake Blood, he's sort of a bit older than some of the really young electronic producers, but he's kind of leading the way on that electro scene. He knows how to make people dance.
Wicked. Chris. Nicky and the Dove, you aware
of
their work?
I wasn't much aware of them, to be honest. I like, in the press release, they describe themselves as pro-pop, which I think is a good stance
good
to have.
Good to be pro-pop.
I think it's pro-pop. I'm pro-pop. I think that's a good tune. And they say the Scandinavians still keep doing the electro-pop, sort of female glacial electro-pop, better than anyone else, I think.
Do you know why Scandinavian, Sweden, particularly Swedish artists, write such strongly melodic songs?
No, I do not.
According to Bjorn from ABBA,
he should know,
once told me that it's because Swedish folk music is apparently unbelievably melodic and kind of poppy compared to any other folk music in, you know what I mean?
That's interesting.
From around Europe. And that was where he thought that sort of thing that ABBA do, and to a certain extent all these other artists that we're talking about subsequently have done, where they don't shy away from having an
There's
incredibly
no shame
strong
in melody.
No, absolutely. They're not going to fuck it all up. So there you go.
Is it that they have sort of 6 months of complete darkness and winter, and then when they all come out of that, they're like, get the guitars,
tunes, come on, people.
Sad songs in the winter.
So do we know when it's coming out, the Fake Blood thing? Any idea? It's
promoed, hot.
Very hot off the press, so I'm playing on my show this week, and yeah, I imagine it will be out shortly after.
I'm sure you can track it down on the internet if you look hard enough. Okay, we move on to track two, which definitely is available on the internet. I can tell you it's on YouTube at the moment as we speak. This is My Choice. My choice of Singles Club this week. It's an extract, a very short extract from a much longer track that isn't representative in some ways of the rest of the track, because it's very difficult to be representative of the rest of the track because it keeps changing for like 18 minutes. That's Aerial Pink's Haunted Graffiti, Witch Hunt Suite for World War III. It came out originally apparently on a limited edition single or something a few years ago, and they've reissued it in tribute to the 10th anniversary of 9/11, which the lyrics deal with at some length. Now, I brought it in. I, this is not a song I wholeheartedly recommend. I brought it in because I can't think of another artist that, you know, people sometimes say he really polarizes opinion. Aerial Pink literally polarizes my own opinion. In the Round and Around, the single off the last time, probably my favorite single of last year. Yeah. So there are other bits of that album, basically unlistenable. Yeah. And this, it strikes me as the best and the worst of Aerial Pink in one track. I can't work out whether it's meant to be taking the mickey. Yeah. There's bits where I thought, oh, this is beautiful. This is just stupid. There's bits where I took it, you know, it seemed very emotive and heartrending. And there's bits where it's like, you're just like a hipster dicking about. I just couldn't get a handle or a purchase on it whatsoever.
I would tend to agree. Especially when you watch the video, because that certainly doesn't clarify the matter, does it?
No. I couldn't work out whether he's taking the mickey out of 9/11.
Exactly. Or... I mean, apparently he started writing it on the original 9/11. That's where its genesis comes from there. And yeah, it's sometimes it feels quite sentimental, the video. Mm. Sometimes it feels like it's just mocking. And its lyrics don't really clarify matters. It's a very strange song.
It's a very, very odd, but good, I think, in some ways, to be challenged to that degree by an artist. Rob, are you an Aerial Pink fan? Is it the kind of thing you play on your Radio 1 show?
It is, yeah. Yeah, I've played Aerial Pink. You know, I love the whole Car Park label, Animal Collective. But, you know, like you, I kind of dip in and out. I don't sit there. I couldn't necessarily sit there and listen to a whole album and kind of really sink into that. That sounded like a kind of electronic Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, that's probably quite a good way of putting it, with all the ridiculousness that implies. Yeah, yeah.
I like the sort of pompous synths in the... Mm,
mm, and it's so long that they actually charge. Normally a download's 99p or 79. It's so long, it's £1.29.
Yeah, extra, like, 30p's worth of music. No, I mean, I cannot... I can't make my mind up about him. I can't get a handle on him. I'm really intrigued to see them live.
Apparently terrible.
I don't want to see him.
According to their Wikipedia page, there's a quote where he spoke to the New York Times or someone saying that we're just used to getting booed now. It's just, we just take it with the territory. We always get booed.
Really?
Apparently they just...
Once interviewed, who was that band? Salem. And he said, oh man, we're terrible live. It was awful, man. Every gig, he'd say, oh, now how about, you know, you played on whatever, some Lollapalooza. Oh man, oh, it's awful, man. Then at one point he went, I don't understand why people say we're a goth band. And it's like, because you called Salem and you had a picture of a flaming cross. And anyway, right, that's Aerial Pink, Witch Hunt Suite for World War III. Available for
£1.29
for iTunes, and also available for nothing, particularly if you want to see the slightly, well, deeply peculiar video on YouTube. Finally, here's Chris's choice. Yeah. That's Justice, Justice, and Helix. Chris's choice this week, following their appearance on the programme last week, when Tim Jones picked a track from the Audio Video Disco EP. So it was his single of the week. Possibly the first time that I think that's ever happened in the history of Music Weekly that the same band have cropped up 2 weeks in a row. However, tell us about this. Tell us why you like it.
This is, well, it's from their album, which is coming. I mean, it's the first album since their debut. I think it was 2007. So it's been a long time coming, and I generally like the kind of French electro thing. And I do sometimes wonder if I just like just Justice because Daft Punk aren't around, sort of thing, because there's a certain obvious similarity. But this, I wasn't so keen on the Audio Video Disco track, which I guess would have been the one that Tim
brought in.
And I was a bit disappointed with that. I think that's the actual lead single, whereas this Helix one has leaked this week. And I think it's a stronger song and makes me much more enthusiastic about their new album, which, of course, is on Ed Banger Records, which is having a very sad week this week because of their DJ Medi guy, who's obviously...
Yeah, he died in bizarre circumstances. I didn't quite understand. I must admit, I've read the news reports. He was, like, on a balcony and it collapsed?
On a roof or something, I think.
He was, sorry? Yeah.
No, he was in his apartment, and I think part of the roof collapsed. Because him and... Riton, who are Carte Blanche, played at Bestival on Saturday, so they'd all been there, the whole crew, Ed, Busy P and everyone, and then this news came through on Tuesday. It was absolutely shocking.
God, that's just, it's just horrible. And condolences out to the gentleman and anyone who knows him. What I would say about this track is that I do like it. I struggle to see where the development is. To be with the best will in the world, that track could have been on Discovery by Daft Punk. Actually, it could have been on the Homework by Daft Punk, yeah. And that came out in 1990 whatever. But you know, it's good nonetheless.
But that's, I mean, the pastiche of that kind of music is still really good, whereas the pastiche of Oasis is rubbish. You know, a pastiche of that kind of a great electro French electro house still sort of does it. I'd like to hear that in a club. It sounds.
Yeah, no, I'd like to hear it in a club as well. Rob, would you like to hear it in a club?
I would, yeah. I think, you know, what you're saying is the reason I absolutely love it, because I just can't get enough of that. And I was brought up on that, you know, that the whole French disco scene was you know, was some of my first sort of modern dance music that I was into. So, yeah, I love that sound. I love that, you know, I'm a massive sucker for arpeggiated synths. And, yeah, you know, like you say, in the absence of a new Daft Punk album, this is the best that you can get. And there's a lot of other people do that sound, but they don't do it anywhere near as well. And it's actually probably quite difficult to do a sort of copy or a pastiche of it. And it kind of makes you happy, makes you want to dance around with your pants on your head.
And I guess the progression that they're doing is the Audio Video Disco track, which is a bit different and a bit less of a kind of big dance floor banger than this one.
Yeah, no, fair point. That is... on their forthcoming album. While on the subject of Justice, they probably got the most passionate comment from the blog last week. Pop Bijou frothed with this thought. So glad you reviewed the Justice single. I heard it the first time and thought it was absolutely vile. Vile, vile, vile. It's prog rock, for Christ's sakes. To me, that is about the worst music I can think of, that sort of wanky waste of arpeggios because we can. Justice had this thing going on back in 2007, which was to rescue the naff rock genres into electronic music from a particularly French perspective. It goes on. He didn't like it anyway, suffice to say. other comments we had, we played a track by The Antlers last week. Token Gesture said of The Antlers track, I can't say I think of Snow Patrol or Coldplay when I listen to them. They have a delicacy to their sound which is more interesting than the broad strokes of those bands, I think, which presumably explains why they haven't had a hit. While Blandy said, first reaction to The Antlers, so this is the first Matt Cardle single, is it? It's a little bit harsh, I'd have thought. I could virtually hear the hat and smell the check shirt. Anyway... Your reviews of this week's tracks and anything else from the programme, please. guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to be. So, the Guardian Summer of Music season is over. Somewhere in the country, thousands of portable toilets are presumably being swilled out in preparation for next year. I wonder who does that. It never occurred to me. There must be just...
It's not a good job, is it?
Don't they go to horse races or...
But they must have to do something to them. They can't just ship it straight from Bestival.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah, that is someone's job. As soon as the toilets arrive at our festivals, then I do a sort of bit of a go round and see which ones haven't been done properly.
Oh, no. Of course, they'll all be used for the Olympics next year, aren't they? There's a shortage. That's supposedly why Glastonbury chose next year as its year off rather than this year, because of the shortage of portaloos next summer.
Is that what it's... Wow. I didn't know. There you go. Amazing. Well, how was it for you, anyway? One estimate put the total number of festivals that took place this year at over 500. Amazing. So we've decided to look back at some of the best bits from the year's events. Rob, leaving aside your own contributions to the festival genre, which is Best of All in Camp, Best of All, did you go to any others this year?
Yeah, I went to a lot. I went to Rockness, Secret Garden, Glastonbury. I went to numerous other ones in the UK and a couple abroad as well. So,
well, when you go, is it sort of increasingly a busman's holiday? Or did you sort of go around looking at, you know, my dad used to design supermarkets, right? And whenever I went to the supermarket, he would go around
rubbish
and look
on
at
the
fitting. Is it like that? Or do you sort of, you know, cut loose and have fun and enjoy yourself? Like
yeah, no, I just, you know, get stuck into the rider and enjoy it. I mean, normally I'm DJing at them, so sometimes I do end up as a just a spectator, punter, but normally I'm DJing and I just love going to festivals. I love going to other people's festivals. I actually love the fact that I don't have to worry about where the toilets are or, you know, if this person's enjoying it or the sound system's right or whatever. So, yeah, normally I just get stuck straight in and, I mean, Glastonbury is, I think that's like the 17th or 18th Glastonbury I've been to on the trot. So,
wow.
It's
you
religion.
Get engaged at Glastonbury, am I right?
I did, yes.
So did I, thanks.
Did you? Really?
Oh, right.
I didn't get engaged. You wouldn't get Mrs. Petridis at Glastonbury. I really lassoed her, frankly. But so what was your highlight? You clearly, I think, out of all of us, Chris, where did you go this year?
I went to Glastonbury.
Yeah.
V, Stand and Calling. I went to a couple abroad. I went to Opener in Poland, which was interesting, in a big old airport. Yeah, I went to one in Italy as well.
I went to Glastonbury.
we all went to Glastonbury.
We all went to Glastonbury. Let's ask you individually. Rob, first of all, what's the best thing you saw? Any of those things? You can include something that happened at one of your own festivals.
Crikey, what was the best thing? Probably the Pagoda stage at the Secret Garden Party, which is like a stage kind of set on a lake and lots of people raving away. It was sunny one minute, raining the next, and it was just sort of beautiful anarchic vibes set in the beautiful UK countryside. Mm. And I was playing old school rave on it, so it's sort of
fantastic. Nice. Always a pleasure, I would imagine, to play out in that sort of environment. Chris, what's the best thing you
do? I think the highlight was probably Eminem at V. I do love Eminem, and I've always been very frustrated with his live performances because he hams it up with this silly pantomime stuff with his chainsaw and pretending to take pills and that kind of stuff. And he just came on and delivered a properly lean and really impressive set, and I absolutely loved it.
Did he draw a big crowd? I mean, I was under the impression, and possibly incorrectly, that Eminem's career is slightly on the way.
No, I think the biggest selling single in the UK last year was Eminem and Rihanna. So The amazing thing for Eminem, he's come out of the madness of sort of tabloid notoriety and is still as popular as he ever was. And that's very seldom happens, that he can actually now enjoy sort of being beyond the madness whilst at the same time still being massive. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's huge. And it was his first UK show for 8 years or something. And I think I saw that show and it was a bit disappointing. So
was that at Milton Keynes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was at that. Yeah, it was a bit.
Yeah, just they say it was just so
pantomime.
Got like
50% for your money that day, I seem to remember as well.
Yes, exactly.
Always, you know, never really. I mean, there's a lot of coverage of TV. I feel like I've been to a lot of festivals. Obviously, Glastonbury, Tea in the Park, Reading and Leeds. Sky Arts, between the Isle of Wight, Down and Attitude. They did Best of All as well. Which I don't think I've seen yet. Has it been broadcast yet?
Yeah, it was in 3D as well, so which was pretty
wow.
crazy.
Wow.
I saw half a song of Pendulum in the truck behind there. There's about 30 guys lined up all doing something, which I don't know how it works, and they just stuck this pair of glasses on me, and it was like, that is crazy. And I was a little bit cynical before I saw it, but actually festivals in 3D are pretty crazy when, you know, the crowd shots and everyone
going like that, raving away.
And
I watched some of the Isle of Wight Festival the other night. Cortinas were on. That guy, he can't sing for toffee. The best one, I've met him, he's a lovely bloke. He came to the Guardian once and I met him and he was a smashing guy. But it was like properly like on an Ian Brown scale.
That's the problem with TV.
It totally destroys the magic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're in a field, it's loud, it's boomy, you can't really tell.
Rob, do you think that sort of discouraging people, the fact that you can get a bit of sort of vicarious festival action on the telly, do you think that's discouraging people from coming? Do you think people, you know what I mean?
I think it would discourage the extremely kind of fair weather festival person.
You would have to be fairly fair weather to go. Glastonbury's on telly. No, I
think Glastonbury is probably the exception, that so many people try and get tickets for Glastonbury and only so many can. And I think it's probably a little bit of solace that they can actually watch it on TV, and it is so well produced on TV for Glastonbury. Anything else, I just think it's a bad kind of second-hand replacement for it, really. There's nothing like waking up in a sweaty tent with people you don't know after a really terrible burger to go and see another load of bands on dodgy sound systems.
No, I can completely agree. I think it's what you say about the sort of dissipation of the magic. I watched Elbow's set from Glastonbury, and I was in the crowd for that. And, you know, it's slightly oddly a bit of a backlash against Elbow at the moment, which I don't really understand, popularity or whatever. I thought that was one of the most sort of amazing, genuinely moving kind of things that I've ever seen at a festival. I've never really seen a crowd lose their shit in.
But
quite
see, part of that whole thing was based on the weather, though, wasn't it?
Because
we'd been through it. We'd been through that horrible.
And then I watched on telly, and it was good, but it was just you didn't get that. So if somebody had gone to you, that's the best thing I've ever saw at Glastonbury. Was it?
I mean, I saw Coldplay at Glastonbury. I actively really don't like Coldplay. Somehow got dragged down there. I think it was my birthday and I'd had one or too many pear ciders. But the moment where they did that crazy video mapping of the top of the pyramid stage, I don't know if people saw it on TV, but it looked kind of good on TV. But when you were actually there and they suddenly, the whole of the pyramid stage kind of started wobbling and waving in these psychedelic colours, it was one of the best things I've ever seen at a festival. So yeah, you've got to be there really to get these moments. You just can't capture it on TV.
It'll be interesting to see if Sky Arts, because Sky Arts have obviously gone big on festivals.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see whether next year they have more or less, because I wouldn't be surprised if it was less.
I wondered how much access, just watching the Isle of Wight footage, I wondered how much access, whether they've been denied access to some of the bigger bands or whether it was a blank, because the people I had on, the bit that I watched before I'd sort of driven to bed by the fella from the Cortinas, not literally driven to bed, but you know, I just, this comes a point, I'm not watching this anymore.
No.
It was Big Country, who now have the fella from The Alarm singing. It was the Cortinas, and then something else. But it was kind of pretty lacklustre stuff. And you thought, well, there must be better things on at the Isle of Wight. And I wondered is that how it works? Do some bands go?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a really tricky one. The TV thing's always in the contract from the start, and then it might only be a week before. And you know, literally last week, Robert Smith kind of signed off the TV stuff for us. So The Cure were on, looked absolutely incredible. Bjork, on the other hand, wouldn't agree it. So we lost sort of one of our headliners. Luckily, there are enough other people playing that you can kind of fill it up. But yeah, I mean, if you know, it could happen that all three of your headliners say, no, we're not doing TV, and you've got a huge TV production there.
Yeah. Well, what about smaller festivals? How did they do? How did they do this year?
It's been a tough year, hasn't it? Obviously, Rob, as the one of the founders of the Association of Independent Festivals, is very well placed to discuss such matters. But yeah, I think everyone would agree it's been a tough year for some and an amazing year for others.
Yeah, there's no sort of rhyme or reason to it, really. If you talk to some of the smaller promoters and they've done amazingly well, others like Truck and I can't remember some of the other ones that unfortunately didn't happen this year. But there were about 42, I think, as of the last count, that didn't happen. That didn't happen.
Wow.
Yeah. And some of them very late on, you know, like literally the week of it, it's like poor ticket sales or some, unfortunately, the weather got them. So I know only too well how on a knife edge everything is. We had a 68 mile an hour near hurricane 3 days before Bestwell, and you know, we nearly couldn't open the site. So it is so knife edge. And if you're an independent promoter especially, then everything sort of hangs on your luck. But I think the thing is that's happening is, yes, the market's saturated, but obviously also there's a recession going on. People haven't got as much money, especially students, you know, amongst other people, and that's what's happening is people have got less money and there's so much choice, so ultimately some of the festivals are going to get squeezed out.
It's a slightly tangential point, but I was at a kid's party the other day, and I was talking to one of the dads.
One day,
20 years ago, it would have been a festival, you know. One of the other dads had a company that goes around selling like vodka shots at festivals.
Okay.
And he said he really, really noticed the difference, because he went to more corporate ones like V and, you know what I mean? And he said in the past it would be like, you know, City Boys on a weekend out, and it'd be like 50 quid, give us, you know what I mean, 25 vodka shots. And he goes, this year it's exactly the same people there buying one or two vodka shots.
Yeah. I mean, it's really whatever, because this feature I've done for Friday is all about the festivals and the big ones and the small ones, and everybody across the board has said they can absolutely tell that people are a bit more skint. There's just not as much money out there. And where the guy from Seatwave, the secondary ticket agency, saying whereas a few years ago people would, as far as they're concerned and their whole model is based on demand, would have been going to four or five festivals a year, quite a lot of people, nobody's really going to more than one or two now, you know. So that means those three or four are obviously struggling.
What's the answer? How do you survive a recession in the festival market? I mean, it strikes me that the festivals that are probably going to do well small festivals that will do well, regardless, are something like where it's incredibly focused, like Green Man, which has an identity and a brand. And festivals actually true to, you know, it's also true of that, where you sort of know the crowd they're going for.
Yeah.
You sort of, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Green Man, it's quite a diverse lineup, as is festival, but you sort of, I've never been to festival, but I kind of know the people, that will turn up. Green Man.
Yeah, festivals like End of the Road, you know, kind of like the Green Man, folky, acoustic-y, Americana, you know, people know what they're getting. They tend to be able to get hold of the best in their field, and I think that's really important. You know, we do that at Bestival, we get the best in our field for what people want to come and see. And so it's you know, it's very important on acts. I think there's definitely going to be a bit of a backlash against the bigger festivals. I think that's already happened this year. People are going to go, they're getting more choosy. They've been to now a wave of festivals for 4 or 5 years, and they're kind of looking a bit further afield. They're going, well, I might try Stand and Calling or Kendall Calling or that new little one down the road, because actually it's only 80 quid or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, price and what you get to see there are more and more vital.
Definitely price. I mean, some of the smaller, some of the sort of mid-level festivals have been charging like 130, 140 quid for a weekend ticket and not really having the acts to justify it. Like Stand and Calling, which I went to this year, it's a wonderful little festival. It gives 120 quid for a weekend ticket and they had Lamb headlining the Saturday night. And, you know, that's...
Whoa.
That's just not going to... Whoa. That's a lot of money for...
No, I mean, God bless them. You know, everybody likes... You know what I mean?
You know, Lamb. If you love... I love Lamb, but on a Saturday night
festival...
They're
not festival, a festival. I'm sorry, we're the best one in the world.
I went to Chuck. Chuck has gone into liquidation this year, and it's a festival I love. I've been a lot, and I went last year, and on the Saturday night their headliners were Mew, the Danish sort of prog band, and you know, it's full of 19 year olds just wanting a big night out, and you've got Mew, and you know, I love that band, but nobody watched them.
And has the festival audience changed, do we think?
Certainly at V it has. It was amazing to see every woman had Hunter Wellies floral top and a flower headband. I mean, and I saw hundreds of women with the same flower headband, which presumably got from Topshop. And you, when you realise that festivals have become, that these people have a sort of festival element of their wardrobe, it's like, that's what I wear to a festival. This is my flower headband, this is my flowery top, and this is my Hunter Wellies. Because they wouldn't wear them anywhere else. You're not going to go to the pub in a flower headband, are you?
But do you think it's that people have actually changed? Rather than, you know, festival people, it's actually people have changed. Like maybe 10 years ago, those girls would have been in shell suits.
Yeah, well, I guess they just wouldn't have been going to a festival. That's the thing. And it's great that it has become a sort of mainstream thing. You know, people in their 60s go to festivals now. Families go to festival now.
Yeah.
You know, it's great that it is. And like you've said, it's something to be proud of. No one does festivals better than Britain. I mean, you know, it's one of the things we can certainly be proud of about this country.
Has the audience changed at Bestival, do you think? Is it a wider audience? Is it? Because you started out as a dance-themed, should we say, event.
Not intentionally, though, and that was always a bad sort of starting off point, because people on the Isle of Wight thought it was just some huge rave descending, because we had Basement Jacks and Fatboy Slim. But essentially, it's always been a broad kind of church, and yeah, I mean, anything goes. You know, we've had Amy Winehouse to Aphex Twin, Kraftwerk to The Cure. It's really anything goes, and lots of new ravey stuff, but lots of old stuff. And so, I mean, this year was the best crowd we ever had. Very, very varied. More families coming back, which I was glad to see, because we sort of actively discouraged people with kids coming, because we started our other festival, Camp Bestival, which is aimed exclusively at families and people with kids. And we thought Bestival was too racy. But this year, maybe because of the lineup, Cure, PJ Harvey, Bjork, you know, a lot of people bringing their kids. And I can see that is possibly the future for Bestival.
Maybe it's down to the PJ Harvey thing, because I know some people who went to Camp Bestival the year that PJ Harvey's on, said that unfortunately PJ Harvey was on at the same time as Mr. Tumble. And Mr. Tumble apparently totally murked. He murked PJ Harvey, apparently. There was like three. Because obviously you got it, you know, you're with your kids, you got to go and see Mr. Tumble.
Funnily enough, that's not true, because PJ Harvey, and this is true, actually requested that every single other thing on the site was turned off during her show because it was acoustic. And she does very few shows. It took me years to persuade her to do it, but... And I mean this in a nice way. It was, she couldn't have anything else on site. So even the burger van that was playing some music, we were running around going, no, turn it off. So there's literally nothing on site apart from her when she played.
Oh, no, I really wish that story had been
true.
Your
friends are lying about Mr. Tumble.
Wow. Does he pull a big crowd, though?
He pulls probably the biggest crowd at Camp Bestival.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of that.
Yeah, no, it's a great thing, Mr. Tumble.
There's lots of people listening to this podcast going, who is Mr. Tumble?
Yeah, it's just you've probably not heard of him. It's kind of underground. Let's wrap things up. Thank you both for coming in today. Rob, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. I hope to see you again. I hope you come in again. Hello, Chris. Goodbye, Chris. Thank you very much for coming in. Don't leave it so long.
Another five years. See you in 2016.
Should you have not had enough of festivals, you can see the whole of the Guardian's festival coverage from 2011 on the site at guardian.co.uk/music. Also, Chris's excellent article, I'd say that because I've read it, is up on the site today. So check it out. That's it for this week. We'll be back next Friday as usual. I'm Alexis Petridis. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.